Raising Maine's Public Safety Regulation Subcommittee, Monday, April 26, 1999, hearing room H-170.
Okay. We will convene the Public Safety Subcommittee for Monday, April 26th. We are going to deviate from the schedule for just a moment, and we will open the public hearing on House Bill 5055, or the Municipal Authority, and we will hear from John Latimer, Secretary of State, Audit Division.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm John Latimer, Director of the Audit Division, and I'm going to speak fast to bring my 5 minutes. I wanted to make 2 points that I made rather strenuously with reference to the audit committee, which I hit and I think that I need to make here too. That's that Title I, which was passed in 1995, requires very broad and somewhat excessive auditing to be done by the Secretary of State with regard to juvenile corrections programs. When we started the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, they opined, I think, that the legislature did not mean for that kind of extensive auditing. But within the statute, we don't really have too much leeway other than all of the statutory requirements that we have. And if you let me read very quickly to you the paragraph in Senate Bill 1 that requires us to do what we attempted to do and were really unable to do, and the auditors will tell you why. It says in Senate Bill 1, right at the beginning, Section 1A, program policies and services shall be regularly and independently audited as to their effectiveness in providing public safety and preventing a child's return to criminal behavior. The effectiveness part of it is what requires a great deal of work. And so we began, and the auditors will talk about this audit, to look at how we might assess the effectiveness of juvenile corrections programs as they're delivered in the state of Oregon. The major problem with that is that the legislature expects, I think, if I read the bill correctly, a state system of juvenile corrections with state outcomes. The problem is we don't have a state system. We have 36 systems or more. And so, and all doing things differently, trying to accomplish the same things, keeping information in different ways, so it's so difficult to give you a statewide perspective. And that's what this audit is about, and rather than spending a lot of time talking about it, I'll let the auditors who did the audit talk about it. But suffice to say is there is a problem in Senate Bill 1 that requires us to look at a statewide system when we don't have a statewide system.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Herman Kahn. I'm a state audit administrator with the Oregon Audit Division. With me is Sandra Horst, senior auditor of the Oregon Audit Division. I'd like to briefly introduce you to the audit report you have in front of you. It's entitled Oregon News Authority Juvenile Justice System Review, report number 1999-04. This report was issued just about a month ago, on March 10th, 1999. We provide an executive summary, Roman numeral pages 5 through 7, that covers Mr. Latimer's comments in terms of the recognition that the juvenile justice system is comprised of many, many different subsystems, including the 36 counties, as well as the Oregon Youth Authority and their private providers. When we were asked to look at the efficiency and effectiveness of the system, we were faced with 36 or more independent parts functioning independently of each other. Made our job auditing fairly difficult, but I'll cover those as we go through the report. The essential upshot is that we were unable to obtain statewide data that allowed a comparison of county to county. There were additional complicating factors, such as the fact that different police departments record crimes differently, different clerical personnel in different counties record crimes differently. In fact, might record the same police report in two different ways. So not only are we looking forward to the implementation of a new computer system, we believe training and consistent application of the law by both police and the data entry folks will improve the comparability of the data in this very, very broad system.
Are you saying that a person in one county may come under stricter enforcement sentencing and restitution than possibly a person in one county could meet the same requirements?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, we did not look at the difference between prosecution crimes in different counties, but in terms of data, clearly some differences. For example, one county we visited would not record, either police did not record or the data entry people did not input, minor status offenses such as a minor in possession of tobacco, whereas in an adjoining county, that offense would be both recorded and any police prosecuted, but we did not look at the differences between whether counties followed up on those. We basically looked at the data and the consistency of whether they input it the same way, whether police treated and recorded it the same way.
Here, the police department is applying the severity of the crime before it's actually into the computer system, I guess the DA or whoever else is involved. What I'm getting at is, we always hear that human crime from city police
that actually Gene Franco shooting, they didn't have any message as a kid. But the parents had added up and turned to expect something. The Colorado thing is, I mean, these kids had a record. Everybody's now talking about it. Nobody wanted to admit it at first. So it's interesting that you have all these records and law enforcement apparently isn't using this to be consistent. And what do we need to be consistent?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Hale, clearly consistency is a big issue. Another issue is with the law enforcement data system that occasionally, if a youth offender is picked up for multiple offenses, let's say they have 7 offenses they committed for willfully charged, the judge may only allow the recording of the most serious offense. So what we noticed was that in cases where a youth had multiple offenses, sometimes only the most serious single offense was being recorded rather than all 7 in terms of that. So our review found that consistency was an issue. Again, we didn't study prosecution of the outcome of that. The only reason for that is we were unable to trace one youth from apprehension through to prosecution or disposition because of that data problem. So not only would it require the kind of technology that the authority is working on, but also consistency. And I think we would agree that that would be both in terms of how the police department reports crimes as well as how the town would report
crimes. Once a student, a young person, young adult, has turned over to Oregon Youth Authority, is Oregon Youth Authority treat that young person the same in one county as another, or do they have consistency at the same level? You're saying if I can get this information, something must be driving us, it's difficult for you to get this information.
Right, Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, the difficulty we think is simply borne out by the fact that the 36 counties operate differently, have different criteria, at least for now, in terms of data entry. And understand the utility is attempting to fix that with the same system, the JGIF system. In terms of the consistency of how it handles each offender, we did not look at that issue, but that's even at them, but we found no indication to it.
Once
the information is in the system.
Thank you. Okay. Let's hold the questions until we're done with the report. All right. We're going to move right into the session on VA. We're going to lose members at 2 o'clock, is that right?
Yeah. Okay. As I mentioned, there's a new statewide information system being developed. The cost is estimated at $9.6 million, and the system will be an important step toward equalizing and getting comparable data from county to county. We provided a report, pages 1, 2, and 3, a background section that discusses Oregon law, the foundation of the juvenile justice system, and again, there's independent portions of the system, the counties, the youth authority, as well as private providers. We provide for the reader information on the typical case flow through the juvenile justice system from arrest through disposition, and then we provide a description of how we conducted our audit on page 3, and essentially, Mr. Latimer reminded you of the Senate Bill 1 requirement that we had to follow, and it's not being run into obtain statewide data. We visited 7 counties in the course of our work and interviewed dozens of folks responsible for juvenile justice, both at the county and state level, as well as looking at a couple of private providers. And the information we found is essentially the basis for the rest of the report. If you turn to page 5, please, we note here that there is no current information system statewide that allows the collection and reporting of data related to juvenile crime. I should indicate that every county has a different system, and most of these are comparable, but the fact that the crimes are recorded differently and the fact that we have difficulty tracing an individual youth from arrest through disposition made that task very difficult. As we referred to earlier, there will be statewide information. System implementation is expected to be completed by June 2001, again, at a state cost of about $9.6 million. The summary data by county varies. There are many different sources of data on youth offenders, but we do, in view point out on page, that current decentralization of data is apparent to the way the system itself is structured, which is a decentralized system of 36 independent counties, the state, and private providers. In terms of our work as auditors, it would help us a lot to have centralized data to make the comparison between county and county. I don't know from a policy standpoint, I didn't comment on that, whether that helps you make policies better. My sense is that it would, but we also have to keep in mind that we're dealing with a very decentralized system. So there would be some trade-offs, either centralizing a decentralized system to make comparable data, or keeping it decentralized, but accepting with that the fact that you can't compare apples to apples. We discussed the recidivism report and issues related to it on page 8. We talk about the annual reports that the county juvenile department prepared on page 9, and indicate that the U.S. legislators and policymakers may not be receiving the information we need to make decisions in terms of some information provided to us by one of the county juvenile departments. So that data may be entered into the current JDIF system, the juvenile department information system. That juvenile department has not been successful in pulling out meaningful reports. So again, a data issue, data comparability as well as the availability of that data. We do refer to the summary report data that's available at the county level on pages 10 and 11 and talk about the information that we were unable to obtain and you can just use this information for your reference. We basically raise with each bullet there on pages 10 and 11 information that we feel would be helpful to look at a juvenile system. And then in the block following that, there is desirable information. We indicate what is or what isn't available to give even policymakers something to point out there. On page 12, we find that the JDEF, which is the crime system, does not provide standard reports that can link a particular group of youth to dispositions of related crimes, which also impedes our ability to find comparable statewide data. Again, on page 13, we describe the new statewide JDEF, which is the Juvenile Justice Information System. We provide a good deal of information on that. On page 14, for example, there's a table showing the modules of the intended system, the staff hours, duration, effort, and the release date of that module. And essentially, this is scheduled to be complete by June of 2001. There is some concern over individual counties participating in the system on pages 15 and 17, but you'll see in the department's response and the county's response to the audit report that none of all of those issues have been resolved in terms of county participation. Our basic conclusion is one of the concern over that if county X or Y is on board, so much more would be the issue that the more counties can participate and the more control exercise over the quality of the data and the way it's entered into the system, the better and more comparable the data will be. In other words, no matter what kind of computer system you have, if you have different county data entry people entering the same crime in two different ways, you will still impair the quality of the data. In Chapter 2 of our report today on page 19, we discuss a number of other issues that came to our attention as we attempted to find this comparable statewide data. We basically touch on a number of issues, including resource availability, issues about detention beds, where officials in 3 of the 7 counties we visited expressed concern over the availability of detention beds. We describe a lot of the perspectives and reasons why detention bed management is important, as well as issues dealing with facilities for juvenile females, residential and shelter beds, and residential and non-residential treatment resources, which basically gets to the heart of the issue, you know, how many beds do we have, how many resources do we have to deal with the juvenile justice issue. We also found so many terms unique in particular to juvenile justice that we created a brief glossary at pages 27 through 30 that defines some of the terms you may run across within the report and with the juvenile justice system. And then the last item in the report, beginning on page 33, is the agency response. Your AMIS authority concurred with the report and its findings. They also had the input on many of the counties that we reviewed, and they concurred with the findings and the information in the audit report. So that, I'd be happy to answer any questions about our report on the juvenile justice system.
Thanks, Janet. Is there anything to add?
No.
Any questions for our illustrious panel? So I think I'd like to do here is have Rick respond later on in the week sometime. I'm going to put you guys on call. I appreciate your panel. Yeah. Okay, with that, we will recess the public hearing on 5055 and convene the work session on 5510, the district attorney, district attorneys and their deputies. And we will shuffle chairs with staff. Okay, work session 5510, district attorney. Do we have a staff report?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. I have distributed a packet of the memorandum to the committee with a brief couple paragraphs of background. The governing budget was a total of $9,521,000. There is a recommendation to reduce that governor's budget by $358,716. The reason for the reduction is the infancy salary increase that was included for the VA's and deputies in Senate Bill 5523 last year, passed by Indian Monetary, was recorded in all of the differentials and was therefore picked up twice in the 99 development of the 9901 budget. So this is simply a reduction of that group ticket accounting for salaries. There is a set sheet on the back of the memo that goes through the budget development, and we'll see when we're stated here that the reduction was $358,000. And the last page is simply a detailed illustration of the duplication.
We have a budget note with that again.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the state, you also have a proposed budget note. It reads as follows. The district attorney's instance for the Department of Administrative Services are directed to review the district attorney compensation schedule and groupings of counties to determine whether it is appropriate to update or otherwise modify the salary schedule and salary group, and to report to the emergency board on any salary plan adjustments that may be recommended. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's my understanding that the co-chairs were okay with this budget note, but that the concern was that it should not raise expectations of any salary adjustment in the current filing number, that would be information available in output and budget calculation system.
That was my understanding as well. One thing I think we should point out here is that when the $358,000 mistake was found, and there were discussions about cutting 2% out of the witness fee program, and Landon are the state, the state of the sound, discussing long and hard, and functionally elected to hold this budget harmless. This is what we've done. There are any significant adds, but there are no takeaways. Based on what's been going on, if everyone on the committee is aware, I thought that was a fairly rational policy.
Any questions, the note itself, as well as some of the discussions with the intent, is the intent to not allow the district members to actually go in front of the board and maybe demonstrate they need? In other words, are we going to preclude the next from this biennium from being able to even seek any type of additional compensation if the board should see something that should be appropriate?
No, the budget note is pretty clear. You should have a copy of it right there. It says, and to report to the emergency board on any salary plan adjustments that may be recommended. What the pleasure of the emergency board is, we just can't predict at this point in time, but there is certainly an expectation that they will come before the emergency board.
But as we also heard, the staff plan and chair also agreed that should be anticipating that this means that there is going to be any increases, but I just want to have this side, that it doesn't mean that it's included either.
I think both sides of the coin are appropriate to put on the record.
Thanks. There is no guarantees. I don't want to create any false expectations, but I don't want to create any questions.
Well, I'm very interested in that.
I think several members on the committee are as well. Yes, I'm sorry. Comment support this budget. This goes back to kind of what we discussed before when we discussed the court system and the policy decision about where we fund and what we fund as a state versus what counties fund and what they fund as a county and how we make those decisions. And I know that especially if we're in counties, the number one priority was DAs and deputies. But looking at the budget, I'm going to support this budget right now, but I think that's a policy discussion for future legislators or for future legislatures.
Senator Kemp Smith, the answer to that, but this isn't the county's number one priority. It's the taxation of the federal.
Okay.
With 5 million.
I think, well, I don't agree with that.
One is going first.
Let me say that. Yeah. I'd like to echo your sentiments, Representative Patridge. Senate Bill 6 that was reported to us about the Department of Justice did an excellent job in that presentation. You didn't have to get very far in the presentation before it was abundantly clear that while we're making the laws as what we should, and I don't shrink from that responsibility, it's pretty evident that the counties are paying 80% of the tab overall to prosecute the laws we make. There is a definite imbalance to that. And I would expect Representative Patridge and others on this committee would help me try to find additional resources, and I think that's incumbent upon all of us for the rest of the session. Again, I'm not trying to create a false expectation, but you, at the very least, are the chairs under that attention on that issue. Representative Kochanski, Mr. Chair, since we're out there getting ready to vote, I do want to call the record a couple of things. One, I think the budget note is vital and important based on my discussion. It's been a long time since it's been reviewed. I share with the executive concerns that the knowing evidence not working, that this is not enough money to do what we need to do. And sitting on the policy side, we know that there's a critical point of the criminal justice system because the district attorney has to make the determinations and being able to have the resources to prosecute those people accountable. And as we know from the articles on the floor, there's new crimes and some happenings and felonies that are occurring in our current laws that are in fact going to impact the level of service. And I think it's going to show the lack of resources that are existing there and how much more strain it's going to be. And I'm very pleased to agree with the chair. I said that he and others will be in our group that will hopefully be able to help as well to find identify additional money so we can maybe enhance the budget before the end of this session.
Representative, just quickly, along with everyone saying, basically, in Illinois County, the U.S. Department gets $750,000 to these couple investigators and the same exact those put down pretty fast. I can understand what we're doing here. So.
Thank you. Chair, would you entertain a motion?
I would move the LFO recommendation to Senate Bill 6510 as suggested by the Legislative Fiscal Office with the inclusion of the proposed budget note.
Thank you, Senator Hannon. Any discussion? Senator Hannon has moved Senate Bill 6510 with the attached recommendation to the full committee to include the budget note. No discussion? Any objections? Seeing none?
So moved.
This is a Senate bill that we have a volunteer on full, Senator Kim. Carry this. Thank you very much, Chair. I think he has an and for and Senator Burdick, would you do us the honor of sharing this on the Senate floor?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to say that, Mr. Bell, and I do have the same reservations that were expressed here about the level of funding, and I felt that they made a case for a higher level of funding and more.
I would expect a House member to say that as well. If I carry it, I will express my concerns. Do we have a House member who wants to volunteer?
Hmm?
Let's go ahead and put it on the hotline. Okay. We will adjourn the work session on Senate Bill 65 and reconvene the public hearing on House Bill 65 during News 40. And we will invite the governor to Governor Democrat partnership people to Rick Hand, T. Mark, Bobby Green. And we have Mayor Torrey here.
We do not, and we do not have Commissioner Green. I suggest, Mr. Chairman, if I may, to Mark Green as you. I was hoping that we might, Mr. Chairman, move up maybe Superintendent Allen is here, and we would just be waiting for him to have a brief moment to testify.
I think that's great.
We don't have everyone to be in. For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Steve Marks. I'm the Governor's Senior Policy Advisor, and wanted to express our appreciation for this opportunity to have a hearing on the elements of the Juvenile Crime Prevention Package and those elements that relate to children and families. I think you're all familiar with the outlines of the budget proposals that the Governor put before you, $30 million for the high-risk juvenile crime prevention partnership. We put $20 million into alcohol and drug treatment for children and their parents and parents of children for drug abuse treatment prevention. And we put as well $7 million into a home visitation early intervention program in addition to that and in the children and families budget. Each of these components that we've addressed has a couple things. It says general statewide policies and expectations for the public, how the population sees served, the goals of the program, and look to evaluate the effectiveness of program. There is $1 million of high-risk juvenile crime prevention funding that's devoted to research and evaluation, and we think that's very important. I would note that each of you and each of your counties have a high-risk plan for juvenile crime prevention developed, ready to be funded. It doesn't require a legislation of Senate Bill 555. It is placed in an executive order, and you have those summaries, I think, before you today. We appreciate this opportunity. We have a long agenda, so I'm going to let people move through it. Commissioner Green is now here. We also want to take an opportunity to focus on some of the key points and data on juvenile crime prevention, and Linda Wagner will be here to do that, and then we'll work through each of the areas from my list through the other room.
Hey, thank you very much, Chair Wesson, and distinguished committee members. For the record, my name is Bobby Green. I'm Lane County Commissioner from Lane County down in Eugene, Oregon. I'm also here as the AOC Chair of the Human Services and Public Safety Committee, as well as third, as you will, the Chair of our Local Commission on Children and Families in Lane County. And my comments will be very, very brief. I did want to make note.
conduct being defined as, juvenile offenders who commit three or more indefensible crimes. I'd like to put this data in the context of the population of youth in our state to show you that ratio of offenders and specifically the chronic group of offenders. Here we have, in the big blue box, 1994, all of the youth in our state. The population is 1,982,727 plus youth. And the 17-year-olds. So these are youth in the general community. So what we've seen from the recruitment data that I just went through is that of this population, 6% came in the front. A criminal offense in 1994. And of that 6%, 15% went on to commit a majority of new offenses. So I realize that box is smaller, and I don't mean to in any way imply or suggest that their impact on our communities is small. These youth committed over 12 months over 19,000 crimes in our state. Huge impact, very significant, not small at all. But when you look at it as a proportion of all juvenile offenders, and even of all youth, you can see that it's actually a smaller group that are at risk of chronic juvenile offenses. And this in the world is why we saw this every and all of the counties we could have been data. Because it was Lane, Marion, Multnomah, Wasco, Chief, smaller group of kids were committing a majority of the crimes. It was very, unfortunately, it was very predictable and very competitive in sort of county analysis. So this data really drives a three-point challenge. You all have been talking about that this morning, so I'll just go through it quickly. How do you identify the youth in the general community who could be a crime? And what's identified? What do you do to prevent that from happening? And so, since those offenders, how do you identify the group who may be chronic and what you provide to prevent that transition to chronic offenders? And even for the chronic group, what do you need to do to interrupt the chronic behavior so they don't go on to the adult system and they don't go on to pass the criminal activity onto their kids? Because I think certainly that's it. The answer to that is, as we know, you can identify the youth by youth with multiple risk factors. And we're working on a standardized statewide assessment tool to help folks do that at the community level. I think it's a contract with an independent researcher to set that up. So it assesses youth by risk in the community for kind of vendors to identify who's most likely to be chronic. And those groups will be targeted, so there's a one-four person who has targeted for specific individuals.
I've heard a little bit of kind of before processing some past sessions on maybe this exact data. So we're using risk factors to identify the chronic offenders, or using some sort of scale to identify who's most likely to respond to any kind of treatment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, at this point, the assessment tool is set up to identify those who are at high risk. Once implemented, we'll be following up with a validation study to see who's responding to the different types of interventions through the follow-up outcome measurements. But the initial tool is to identify those most at risk for either the first-time crimes or who will be chronic offenders.
Just comment that, I mean, I'd be interested in the course of your comments on the surface of the people that appear to me that those 13% are probably ones that are least likely to respond to any and all types of intervention. The other people are much more likely to respond to intervention and to the fact that they get more bang for their buck and better chance for societal improvement over the long haul. And also, look over the long haul and focusing on these high-risk offenders, you can be able to establish, you know, their risk scales and all that sort of thing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, what we have is, aside from identifying who's most at risk, looking at best practices to what works with these different populations. And there's over 20 years of research to help us know now what is best practices with this group, high risk, with this group, and even with chronic offenders. There's very strong research about what works, reducing risk, improve resiliency, and change the course of criminal activity. The answer is there's going to be a stress group in there, so we need to be locked up for a long time. But they certainly are at the numbers we currently have there. There are strong interventions, best practices, yes, and the national research showed us very strong outcome measures and effectively reducing our crime rate, even at that level, and certainly others have taken on the other forms of the continuum. So that's the two pieces, identifying the risk, and critical, providing science-based approaches. You have to have those two pieces of the equation to intervene in this world. And once you bridge that code, so to speak, you can make a significant reduction in juvenile crime, which is targeting those kids more likely to affect. And now, in addition to identifying the case, providing best practices, we also have what I would call the next generation of accountability with the recidivism data. And I'd like to show you what I mean by that. As I'm working with a group on specific outcome measurements on this, what should happen if we do this correctly, we identify the right case, we provide best services, and maybe we
In the presentation earlier on the ICE, they expressed part of the thing was trying to get a handle on some of these numbers and make assessments. And what you're saying here is that you've been able to isolate and identify young offenders who are repeat offenders. But you don't say anything about the severity. You don't say anything about the possible outcome of the determination. I mean, I was astounded recently that a person in Houston would see a bunch of 16, 17, 18 year old kids as it's going to take penitentiary. So that's exactly that has been the early years of penitentiary, the minor sound team for the major leagues.
It
appears that we're treating the symptoms, but we're not treating the cause. To treat the cause, you've got to break the chain. It's the cyclists that involve us. And I guess also somebody will get to that, but we need to have a reason for breaking the chain and treating the condition rather than just creating more and more feel-good legislation to treat the symptoms when we don't get to the cause of the issue.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Thomas. And what we are finding in the best practices is once you have the best side of you providing services that reduce those risk factors in the life, you can put your health into it. And whether she's performing management, acting on an approachable behavior, alcohol and drug use, maybe a peer association, school problems, but they have multiple issues going on in their lives, and they use a multifaceted approach to reduce the risk, make resiliency, and reduce the flow of taking the chronic assembly.
Okay, thank you.
That's another package. I was glad for her to hand that we don't have any data on the types of crimes that are being committed and the specific of the rate as we move forward and are looking at a female justice package. The primary component, I guess, is around alcohol and drug treatment money, supplies, and the medical components. I'm interested with those types of figures and how those are related into that as we look at this. I mean, if it's like shoplifting and everything like that, you know, I'm trying to figure out as a policymaker where we're going to spend the money. I have large concerns about what the audit said in terms of even the data collection. I'm concerned with that there's nothing that's come forward, at least that I'm aware of. And I don't know we've been stepped down here in ways of anything, not on the policy side about the reporting of the data that's currently out there. I guess my question is either the problem that comes with inconsistencies in the charging decisions that are being made about these juvenile offenders, or secondly, how the data is being reported into the system, and third, the types of programs that are available, whether they be a diversion or deferred kind of sentencing types of program within the juvenile justice system. I guess before I'm asked to spend a lot of money on those kinds of things, we've got the K-12 education budget and everything else around, and I feel like there's anything out there or nothing that's been presented to this committee about, well, if you do this, it would be accountability because with their package, I feel like the report obviously indicates that the JGIS system is going to be the silver bullet that cures it all. And part of my question to you, before we move forward, I disagree that juvenile crime and juvenile crime prevention is important, where's our jumping out of point to kind of high level of comfort among the system so that we can deal with the citizen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Package, you bring up several important issues. I appreciate that. Some of them that I can respond to in my familiarity with the data are, one of the reasons the 94 report took us so long was because we had to go back and recode data. We worked directly with the Juvenile Department Information System. And our initial extract program that took the data elements out and then the reliability test saw that there was a wide range of whether the data was coded among counties and spent a great deal of time recoding, revalidating the data. And that work, as long as it took us to do for 94, it's probably going to get for 95, 96, and 97 data, no benefit. I mean, we'll be able to do that analysis with the data. Between the issues around the different counseling practices among counties, that has not been part or incorporated into the recidivism report. We did not do any type of environmental analysis of the conditions, policies, and procedures within counties that affect the data. And knowing that they vary and still seeing such a strong pattern among counties, I think there will be more confidence in the statement that the high predictability of that small group of kids will commit most of the crime, even with varying types of charging practices or resources.
On the recording of the data, I don't understand how, if you went back into the work in 94, then 95, 96, they changed their practice, how they're taking the data as a result of your
data. The data is automatically recoded now. We put in the code that we need for the extract program to get the recidivism information. So now as the data goes in, it's based on the 94 recode rather than the way they were initially putting the data in. We only had to clean it up one time as the way of answering that question.
If they're reporting the data as a thing,
The reporting differences among counties are at the charge level for the police. Again, we did not include that now in these images in the report. But at the data entry level, the coding of the data, so it's not three in one county, it's not three in another county, and attempted burglary is an attempted burglary among all the counties. It's at that level that we need coding.
The timeline to the use of the pager system or the use of the data recording or any of those kinds of things as we move forward so that we have some accountability from our perspective.
Mr. Chair, Representative, first of all, I think you'll hear a little later today, and I know you'll hear tomorrow, it's during public testimony from a couple of Juvenile Department directors who are 100% committed to getting the right kind of information into the pager system and to develop out the pager system. They've been involved extensively. The quality of the pager system will be a silver bullet. Only if everyone puts the data in on time and it's consistent management. That's one point brought out by the Secretary of State Auditor. That's true of any data system that spans various levels of government and departments. The concern about the counties who may not totally involve themselves in changes, Karen will talk about a bill, legislative bill that's been introduced and had a hearing that might help with that. The bottom line is that it would require those counties, and those counties have agreed that even though they may not be, quote, on the data system, they will provide to the data system all the data points that every other county will provide so that we can continue to get the aggregate data that we would need.
With Karen, with our Deputy Director for the News Authority, yes, there is a bill that actually had a hearing last Thursday and represented the Medicaid Committee. And the issue isn't so much that everybody used the same system. The issue is that everybody used the same data codes and recording and the timelines. And Multnomah County is developing its own system. It's doing so in lockstep with the state. And they are very much in agreement with the bill that would require them to provide their own data to the News Authority. Before the development of data, there was no real reason for the county to agree on a particular way to do business. And the data partners, development of data has actually caused counties to come together with way less acrimony than I would have predicted and talk about single definitions for the way their jobs get done and the work that's carried out across the state. People are very aware of the problems in measurement and very much in agreement to change that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I may add one more point about the recidivism data as it relates to our discussion on justice, is that these recidivism data that I'm presenting today are based on the entire juvenile justice system at the county level. So on JGIS, we'll be able to run recidivism if we're working right now. So the state will be able to run recidivism based on the physical points within the juvenile justice system. We can look at recidivism by the person, recidivism based on probation, recidivism based on out of placement, we do that decision point analysis. And even though we find them now, with all the data incorporated into the ACES, you can look at recidivism at the program level. What we consider to be before and after a specific intervention. So that three-tiered approach that you can use with recidivism data, but at this point, we can only do the most broad with overall recidivism rate. We think we'll be able to do the answer.
Mr. Chairman, I think we've got 555 that's coming, which will help put this together. But when we look at the education side on school gap, the dropout has to be the start of the system probably, with 25% of our system dropping out of school. It makes sense to me that that be part of the scenario. That's the same thing which we've had in the education budget. So when we do Senate Bill 555, if we could have somebody from the Department of Education in here, which would give us some idea of, and I know some programs, I know one that we started last question called Structure of Intellect, which finds out the learning defects in students. And if you put that district into at-risk students, you can really show a success ratio. In fact, we're using the Shutter Correct at that facility. And it seems to me that we need to set the special issue, that we need to broaden all aspects of it as far as funding to make something work.
Well, and we're getting a significant capitalization, and it's very little additional dollars to broaden the scope of the data and reporting, you know, from that initial funding. But I'm not concerned. I'm not defending value changes. I'm not disputing what you're saying. It's just
you know, I just keep nervous when I hear my mama going off over here, and, you know, God knows what my county should be doing. The whatever it is right. I get concerned when I hear this sort of, you know, amorphous definition. What do we do? Let me ask it this way, Linda. If, you know, Bill Gates walks in here and says, this is the one you need. I'm not asking a figure. How long do we get data that's consistent, that's broken down in a meaningful fashion, and that's relevant in terms of this newness? How long? Here's the check.
Mr. Chair, I would answer that in a timeline around when Bill Gates is up and operational, and I don't have that date or idea of what that calendar looks like. So I'm looking for grid
over
here. So that would be when I would respond. So I'm then we're at data, and if operational data is in there, we can start to run the type of analysis on a different level that I have talked about.
Mr. Chair, members of the state, I'm Rebecca Gunn. We will, by the end of the calendar year, have all the counties and the states put together on lines and either using JGIS or, like Monona and Deschutes County, not using JGIS running system, but providing the data that's required. In truthfulness, it will take people a while to get to use the system in all of its capabilities. I believe that the citizen report that Linda's speaking about, that we're going to be able to find out fairly routinely. The system itself has tremendous potential as it's funded. And I probably never said this to the way we say this works.
I heard that.
I'm not sure if you gave us more money, we could move things faster. We are training people all the way from those who have been on pencil paper system on just how to keyboard to Lane County that had a very sophisticated system and it's moving onto basis. So it's training people and then expanding the use of the system.
Bless you for saying that. Represents Patrick.
It's just frustrating to me that we build these systems, and I feel like if we build it, they will come. I like that. I don't remember the movie, though.
Thank you all.
Yeah.
I
mean, I don't want to feel the pain. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know they're a big baseball fan. But my concern is do we have tight guidelines to make sure the counties come on board with this thing, that they're reporting the right requirements, so we can see where we're going to be, and how long is it going to be? I don't want to throw money down a hole, and then, you know, when we start getting reports in 6 years, then our computers are obsolete. We want to go out and get a different computer system as we move forward. And that's, you know, that's what I'm trying to ask about. Is it tight? Is it going to come on board?
The system itself is very tight. Is it a state mandated system, meaning that counties have to use the front end to produce the data that's required by the state? No, we nor the state have not taken that position. Let me explain a little bit about the differences in Multnomah and Deschutes that leave them where they are, is that local jurisdictions often have a greater need to join a local system that's tied together, and we as a state see that we want to tie our own systems together. So the Juvenile Department in Multnomah is tied more in with all of their local law enforcement and social service agencies, and the same with Deschutes County. They have been very supportive of JGIS, participated in all of the development, and said we will provide you the data in the format on the timeline at no cost to the state. You could this law and Representative Manager, the bill and Representative Manager committee would ensure that future individuals, both in state and local government, would continue to adhere to that belief in the system by making it mandatory, which it has not been to date.
That's good. It still doesn't answer my question, though. With the data points that we already know are going to exist, why are we going to be online with those? And if Multnomah and Deschutes County, I mean, we already know now about Multnomah and Deschutes County, and I don't know what other counties haven't signed up to be on board, but what's our timeline for generating the first set of reports and getting everyone on board?
Representative Patridge, I can bring all of that and share with you. I can meet with you separately. We do have timelines about when down to Wayne County by name will come online and will be using the system. Pieces of the modules will be required first, and there is specificity at that level. If you'd like me to come and sort of walk through it and show you a demonstration of the system, I'd be very happy to do that.
No, I think we would go ahead.
I don't even need to do it. I just need a date so we get some things on the record so that we can hold the agency and the other counties and whatever we need to do with now. But I don't want to be. I would prefer not to be offline on this. This is a substantial monetary project the state has funded and continues to fund, and I'd like to have this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, would you feel comfortable if I could provide to you a one-page overview that shows the implementation schedule?
On the record. And we're frustrated. If you said we're frustrated with this, we're frustrated. I know you're frustrated, too. You know, part of the answer to this whole question is the technology piece. And, you know, you've heard this song before.
We're trying to help. You gotta help us.
I think it'd be helpful, Karen, on your explanation when you come back, is to also show us that the anticipated growth rate and technology is going to be to bring these things. It would help me in this budget deliberation to have an idea of what I'm buying into. If I want these kind of statistics and this kind of information, then what is the price associated with gathering that type of data?
And as Karen has said, I mean, I know you're talking future. I mean, for now, we're okay monetarily.
Mr. Chair, yes, we have already done budgeted, and I believe the debt service is still up in the new authority's budget. If all of the counties online and the system implemented, and in the coming biennia, we do interfaces with the state police for exchange of the lens information with the court system, for exchange of that information with the Department of Corrections, so we can track things through. So what you'll be facing in the future is the maintenance cost of the
okay, well, we've seen what's happened in the judicial system and started out something enough, but now we have an information system that exceeds competitors. I mean, it's out there on its own, and we're buying in more and more each biennium, and I think we need to have a case of honesty looking at the numbers and saying this is just not this biennium, this is from here on out, and we're buying into something.
I'm sure also when you come back, I'd like to know the situation of not having the limitations of the system, not having the various other entities at least to support the data to you. Because it doesn't sound like everyone's on board, and I don't have an idea of where we're going and how. And Multnomah County is obviously the biggest, it probably has the biggest caseload probably for juvenile justice in the whole state. And if we don't have their data, I don't know what good it does. I mean, it doesn't do that. That's a lot of good to have this whole system. Without having the data, it doesn't make policy decisions to find out all drug treatments or what specific programs or tracking and that kind of stuff. It doesn't do us any good. And so I'd like to see those limitations because, I don't think it's an unfunded mandate to ask for passing through substantial amounts of money to local communities that we get some data and reporting back from those communities. And, I wouldn't be, and I'll say I'm not above tying it to getting the data back or getting those agreements back and the funding that goes to those counties for these types of programs.
And I will work with staff and...
Yeah, it's possible because, knowing that they hesitate very, what outcome do we get out of that? And what's the expected outcome? We stand up that ball where you can now provide that data. Okay, now that you're smarter and wiser, let that get us up. I'm not offering that as a question to answer now. I know you can do that. But tie that outcome to the expenditure dollars to the program.
Before I step away and again, because these youth have not been in that kind of a system that allows their tracking, what we will be able to provide more information of over time is to be able to look at youth who are in the red box, look at the history they've had, and be more certain of who we can predict is going to get there if we don't do something sooner. But right now, we often don't know of those youth who end up in that red box, but their histories have been like, whether they've been in other counties or other states. And so that's one of the...
I've spoken out in two basic areas. One is basic services. Now, this is the normal graduated sanctions that are part of every juvenile system.
some communities, like Marion County and most others, put most of the money or most of the emphasis on that portion into detention or alternative detention, because that is the critical need, and that is the area where we have the inability to hold youth accountable. And as I described in my testimony, we with the local system have lost credibility with the youth who are in that community and with the community it's supposed to protect, because we don't have some of the tools or any of the tools to hold them accountable the way we would like to and once we're able to. The other strength of the strategy is that in focusing on youth, most of them will be coming or continuing to be delinquent. As Steve just mentioned, focusing on the risk factors, there are five risk factors that are part of the overall scope of this. In our county, we chose three of the five based on some research actually out of Wayne County, where the research showed that the third risk factor was the most, the biggest jump in terms of the likelihood of kids continuing to be delinquent. We've also focused on younger offenders, 11 to 14, first and second time offenders, in the hope that we can identify them early, intervene with them early, and the strategy also includes not just dealing with the youth referred, but dealing with the whole family, which would include siblings, many cases younger siblings, so we're getting down to fairly younger age, also dealing with the issues of the parents. And many of these families, and our judge says this over and over again, many of these families, there are issues with the parents, alcohol and drug issues and others, that are creating an environment where these kids are likely to continue to be delinquent if we're not successful in intervening with the entire family. So that's kind of the gist of our strategy. We've also addressed the issue of aftercare with a small portion. We set aside some funds for individualized service plans, which basically means if that family has issues like transportation, childcare, things like that, to keep them from getting their treatment or getting to the issues that they need to address, then we have some ability to flexibly address those. And then one of the six family support teams that are outlined in our plan is focused actually on youth who are what we call sexually reactive youth. We had, in 1997, 32 youths who were referred to the juvenile department for sexually acting out behavior, which if committed by an older person would be a crime, who would be between the ages of 6 and 11. So we're focusing a portion of that on those, on that target population of youth. And finally, to put this in the context of our earlier discussion, I think it's important to address that the whole continuum kind of thing in terms of the competition between programs for younger age and older age. I just believe that that's a bankrupt policy to try to pick one and not the other, and I think the community agrees in the discussion I heard earlier. But what I would tell you is that we develop these plans in every community. Hundreds of people were involved in these task forces developing these plans. They were based around the $30 million figure that was outlined. And all those dollars are needed for us to intervene effectively. So, we would plead that you would seriously consider the plans as submitted, understanding that these other programs are important and critical to be funded, but not can't either or, and do what we can to address the whole continuum so kids from really birth to age 18 get the services that they need.
Great. Thank you.
Sure. That's my members of the committee. I'm really pleased to be here to talk to you on the back to come to speak about the process that one of the county committees used for putting together the plans and my county of Marion County.
And you are?
The Hewitt. Does that help?
That's Hewitt. You're official now.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank We're always for 3.5 years.
Would you like someone not to?
No, okay. We want you. All right. We're glad you're here.
We were a committee of 27 people in our county. We had an orientation meeting. At that meeting, after some orientation, people presented questions and concerns that they had. We had six additional meetings that were at least 2 hours long. And in between time, we had a subcommittee that met. And the subcommittee reviewed the questions that people sent to us. We made certain that all that information was available so that when people came together, their time was well spent. And they could move to deliberative issues. Our committee ranged from a client, people that were young youth in the system. We had judges, the VAs, we had attorneys, we had line staff, we had people from their services to children and families, and the health department, chamber, the case community, citizens like myself, the police department, and education. And in our county, we're very lucky we had the DSB, and as you know, in our county, the DSB now is responsible for delivering the educational components of the program of work assessment program. So they were a great help to the group. We came together and addressed really two issues. We wanted to know about the current conditions in our county, where we would like to be, and we wanted to know something about the research, what would make a difference, and these views that we were being asked to design a program for. Where would we have the greatest impact with the $1.2 million we would receive in that allotment, and how could we be accountable back to the public and to this body for those dollars that we used? We designed a system, and you heard from both Lane and Marion, that we identified detention needs that address the gender inequity. We set aside a small amount to look at the detention services, transitional programs, the people coming out of the residential care groups. We also looked and folded in the drug and alcohol money that was allotted for that. And finally, we focused on what Marion talked about, was family support teams. With other teams, we put together people from youth and family counselors, our probation officers, the school reps. So we had great buy-in, educational services, all the agencies that would affect this family. We said that in order to be served in these 6 units, we would decrease the caseload significantly to about 20 people so that one could have really make a difference in the lives of these. It's a voluntary participation, the family must agree that they would like to be a part of that because research says that's all that really works with these. You have to work with the whole family. You can't work with the child in isolation from his family. We lowered in Marion County the age to 14 and under. We know that families who are having trouble dealing with their own lives, if they have a child in that system that's caught up in their system, we know the siblings are at great risk for them. And so we said we wanted to intervene 14 and under so that these young people did not enter the OYA system. We would make a difference there. And we said the case people working with the team could work with their siblings. And that really, I thought, reflected Senator Hannon's concern about breaking the chain. If you can work at zero with children coming on with special needs, if you can work with them with the drug and alcohol parenting, we think will make a significant difference when we really get the children at all in. We created the flexible dollars that you heard about. We don't have to buy a program. You can simply secure a service for the children and families that are in the need in those caseloads. We took our plan, and after lots of discussion, and that's really all I'm going to talk about in our plan, to the Public Safety Coordinating Council and received their approval. We took to the Children and Families Commission, we went to our county commissioner, and we made a presentation to the state committee. They reviewed it and approved our plan. We believe that it reflects the citizens of our total county, from police to everyone that I mentioned, people who really care, people who will be accountable back to you for the dollars spent. And we believe that we can make a difference in the lives of these children with the plan we put in place and your help in funding it. Thank you.
Thanks. Ruth, we appreciate it. Any questions for Terry or Ruth about any individual plans?
Thank you very much.
Yes. I'm going to call two witnesses very quickly. Sheriff Ramirez has been waiting very patiently back there. Sheriff, you just have a couple of remarks. I think I have an anticipation of what you're going to say and how long it's going to take, so I appreciate your patience.
Thank you very much, good afternoon, Sheriff Westland and committee members. My name is Raul Ramirez. I'm the sheriff of Marion County. Thank you for allowing me to provide testimony before you. When we look at juvenile crime prevention from a law enforcement standpoint, certainly local communities at the local level are taking a responsible, proactive role in addressing this issue. We recognize that when you talk about juvenile crime, 13% of juveniles commit 85% of our crime. You've heard those statistics. But the significance is having the state provide funding resources to the local level, working at the local level as a law enforcement agency with our community partners, the juvenile department, the courts. This funding is a necessity. It's a need. And again, allowing the local communities to address these issues and utilize these resources benefit our community. A couple of examples I can give you, and I'll make really short here. The reason I was late is I was at a press conference today at the courthouse. We established a partnership. We in the courts, Marion County Courts, law enforcement, sheriff's office, MTV, and the Salem Kaiser School District in addressing the issue of threats in school settings, utilizing technology on doing threat assessment. So our problems are real. The issues and concerns are real. So now we're taking that to the local level of dealing with threats. Working out from a prevention standpoint at the local level allows us to address these problems long term. There was mention about alcohol and drugs, and I've commented on these on several occasions that in the adult system in the jail, 80% of our adults that come through our jail, Marion County Jail, have a linkage to alcohol or drugs. So if we don't get to this issue at the front end, continuing to be proactive and addressing this through prevention, our problems are going to continue to increase. So again, I would advocate for your support on 555, and I guess I'll just send my comments to that. If there's any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Sheriff.
Thank you.
And then we're going to quickly get Bill Lemon up here to hand out, and then we're going to adjourn for the
day. Thank you, Sheriff. Westland members, I'm Bill Lemon, Director of the Criminal Justice Commission. We're part of the planning for the package in my budget, Magnitude Budget, as well as the Youth Authority. What you are getting is copies of the plan for the counties that you represent, which will give you the book version of how that county, well, counties are supposed to spend the money allocated. And the larger packet is the one or two page summary of each county's plan, which Mr. Carmichael referred to earlier. So we do have the moon version and the book version for you today. Very briefly, I think there are four common themes I just want to bring to your attention. First is that in this planning process, the government and interested parties got together wanting to ensure a very broad-based planning process. We have schools, the local commissions on children and families, local public safety councils, alcohol and drug policy councils in each county that were mandated partners in this. What we try to do is integrate the existing plans that affect high-risk youth and make sure those are pulled together, and this money was the glue and the crack filler that we all hoped it would be. Second is the target population. In the points of agreement negotiated by the parties, we did not set age limits. We talked about a set of risk factors that predicted juvenile crime, juvenile criminal activity as they duplicate. So the more risk factors you get, the more likely they are to commit a juvenile offense. Each county took that a little differently, and you'll see both from the age range and the risk factors and the types of kids that they are proposing to deal with, that each county looked at their data, came up with a group of kids that they thought were most likely to commit these crimes, and then made their funding allocations accordingly. The next thing, each plan has an assessment of their basic services, that's shelter care, detention, aftercare, supervision, graduated sanctions. And so what we hope you will also look at this as kind of a need statement from each county on what their juvenile justice system currently lacks, and you'll be able to see how their proposed plan fits in with that. Finally, we ask each county to come up with measurable and achievable goals. one of which is a change in the juvenile arrest rate, but there are many other indicators and measurements within those plans. So if you do, each one of those is listed in the one-page summary, and we also, in those plans, think that you will see a very clear set of things that we can measure, identify, and monitor over a period of time. And with that, I'll close my remarks.
Great. One quick question. Is there an evaluation component in every one of the county's plans to the programs that they're going to implement compared to the results now and after the programs are put in?
Chair Representative Schrader, yes, we're working with Portland State University to develop an assessment tool that will be given at the intake to a program at the exit so we can measure changes in the risk factors for each one of those. In addition, if you look through the individual plans, they brought up how they propose to measure the outcomes and changes.
So there's only one outcome that I measure that, you know, they don't go back in. They do that to arrest. Is that what you're talking about? You said risk factors. I'm not so concerned about that. If you don't see citizens, I'm interested in the, you know, recovery system isn't ready for that particular offender.
Mr. Chair Representative Schrader, I don't know that each program that is funded under these funds will have a recidivism measure as part of it. So the prevention zone thing has gotten there.
Yeah, we're all focused on
the need for that, we'll be able to supplement that as part of program by program. I don't know if we'll be able to get that for you.
Anyway, we're going to hear from the Sunbelt 5x5 folks again and at length, so we're going to have plenty of time to answer these questions, and I apologize to people who weren't able to get up today, but we obviously got behind a little bit. You are more than welcome back, and we are going to have you, so anyway, thank you very much for coming. We are adjourned.
Thank you.